Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 94. My name is John. My honey, my baby, don't put my love upon no shelf. She said, don't hand me no lines, and keep your hands to yourself. Usually, I prefer to have all my thoughts about a subject set before I talk about it. Though my point of view of what I'm about to talk about may change, this is where I am as of right now. I had a very strange dream a few nights ago. It was one of those dreams that made absolutely no sense in reality, but in the dream itself, everything seemed completely normal. I was in a software store. If you were around in the 90s, you probably recall having to go out to buy programs for your computer. And you'd go to the computer store and there'd be boxes containing disks you needed to upload the program. That's the kind of store I was in as I dreamt. However, I was there to buy software because I needed legal help. You see, in the dream, all legal assistance came from software. But that's just the beginning of the weirdness. All of the boxes of software had different groupings of letters on them, because the letters denoted the quality of legal assistance. I couldn't tell you which group of letters had the better quality. It didn't get that detailed. But here's the kicker. You could only purchase the software if all the letters on the box were in your last name. So the quality of legal assistance you got depended on your name. Yeah, like I said, it's kind of strange. And I wondered why this particular dream stayed with me. I mean, there's all kinds of beliefs on what dreams are. I believe that dreams are messages from your subconscious to help you sort things out in your life. For example, I used to dream about being naked in public. That's a dream showing your fear of people seeing you as you really are. When I stopped being ashamed of who I was and hiding that I am a non-monogamous bisexual man, I stopped having those dreams. I also believe dreams could be analogies for how you perceive the world. And I think that's what my legal assistance software dream was telling me. So the quality of legal assistance you got hinged on your last name. Maybe we haven't quite gotten so preposterous yet, but we all know who you are can give you great advantages in our legal system. No surprise there. That corruption of the legal system has plagued humanity as long as there's been civilization. It's nothing new to the United States. That's not the courtroom I want to take on. I want to talk about the sickening bias and corruption in the worst court in the United States, and likely the worst court in the Western world. The Court of Public Opinion. I once again refer to the great movie line from Men in Black. A person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it. This gets to the heart of why all collective ideologies will eventually turn evil. A collection of people amplifies and exacerbates negative emotions. Fear becomes panic. Anger becomes rage. Bad ideas become atrocities. But what happens when a panicky collective begins with a legitimate atrocity? Unfortunately, that's when they start to go on witch hunts. It's been said that it's better to let 1,000 guilty people go free than to have one innocent punished for a crime they didn't commit. That's why our judicial system proclaims that you are innocent until proven guilty. And you are supposed to administer a punishment that fits the crime committed. The Court of Public Opinion doesn't give a shit about that. Society likes cruel and unusual punishment that destroys a person's life to a point that it can never be rebuilt. Society also likes to punish people for being on the periphery of a crime. There have been many revelations recently of sexual harassment and assault allegedly perpetrated by politicians and people in the entertainment business. I'm not talking about the allegations of child molestation. That's a whole different level of hell for the guilty, as far as I'm concerned. I'm talking strictly about allegations from one adult to another. My favorite running gag in Team America, Matt Damon, recently gave his views on the accusations faced by Harvey Weinstein specifically, and others in general. He's caught a lot of shit for it. It's gotten to the point where some people want him erased from an upcoming movie the same way Kevin Spacey was replaced with Christopher Plummer. Hell, even Lauren Savon, who is one of the women who came forward to say she had been a victim of Weinstein. Is it Weinstein or Weinstein? I don't know. Caught hell for saying Damon had a point. That's it. She just said, he's got a point. Maybe we should listen to him. And she caught hell for that. So I read the interview. And now, I gotta do something I really don't want to do. But I have to. I have to agree with Matt Damon. He stated that it's great that women are coming forward to finally shed light on the actions of the sexual predators. Agreed. I've long said that any victim should be totally comfortable with telling the law about a crime. There's no shame in it. You're the victim. I mean, this is one of the things that a proper government is supposed to do for its citizens. Protect their natural rights from violators. I mean, in reality, the violators are usually the government, but that's another podcast. But the part of the interview that got Damon into a ton of hot water is that he also believes there is a, quote, spectrum of behavior. Let me read some of the snippets from the interview. There's a difference between, you know, patting someone on the butt and rape or child molestation, right? Both of those behaviors need to be confronted and eradicated without question, but they shouldn't be conflated. I have to agree with his sentiment there. How can you equate a single unwelcome touch with a vicious physical violation? If you don't understand how I could ask that question, keep listening, because I understand the situation more than you think. Damon goes on. We're so energized to kind of get retribution, I think. And we live in this culture of outrage and injury and, you know, that we're going to have to correct enough to kind of go, wait a minute, none of us came here perfect. You know what I mean? Yeah, I actually do know what you mean. None of us are perfect. We've made mistakes. We've misread body language. Should people who have apologized for single errors in judgment be lumped in with criminal behavior? Should those be equated with each other? Is our crusade to beat up the bad guys causing us to also dole out punishment to those who may not deserve the same severity? One more quote. And the fear for me is that right now, we're in this moment, where at the moment, and I hope it doesn't stay this way, the clearer signal to men and to younger people is, deny it. Because if you take responsibility for what you did, your life is going to be ruined. I read that line, and I thought to myself, holy shit. I'm not entirely sure he's right, but I think he might be. And what if he is? If a person is truly repentant for doing something wrong, should society continue to punish them beyond, well beyond, what the law requires? If the message from the court of public opinion is, there is no redemption, isn't it human nature to try to hide the shame instead of losing everything you have? And what does it say about how the society is handling the situation? Look, this isn't something I really want to talk about. But I do see both sides of this situation, and I am loath to do this, but I'm going to air some dirty laundry right now. Let me make something perfectly clear on the onset of this. I'm not what the majority of society would consider attractive. You know, being overweight is a huge part of that, pun intended. But even if I dropped the 80 pounds doctors have been hounding me about for years, I would not be on any hot list. I look in the mirror and I think I'm okay, but I accept that's not how most people would assess me. I was even heavier in my late teens and early 20s, so I was never a popular person, and I was socially inept. If you've listened to some of the podcasts from, 5 or 6 years ago, you'll recall I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian setting, so I had a lot of trouble picking up on the traditional societal social cues. Add to this that I didn't really have a father figure, and my mother is the kind of woman who believes in the big Hollywood romance. The end of the movie, the nice guy kisses the girl, and she just falls for him. And keep that in mind as I tell you these stories. I was at a high school party back in my senior year. There was a girl I liked who had just been dumped. I went up to her, and I tried to be sweet and flirty, which, around that time of my life, probably meant that I was nervous and awkward. After talking with her for a while, I leaned in for a kiss, and she turned away. I was stupid, and a few minutes later tried again. To no avail, obviously. And this is the late 80s in South Texas, so there's underage drinking going on, and she gets pretty tipsy. Well, now I'm worried about her, and I just want to make sure she's okay. So I end up hanging out with her and her friends, and going back to their friend's apartment. Eventually, somebody just flat out tells me to take off, because, again, I don't pick up on the social cues. But the next week back at school, I find out there's a rumor going around that I tried to force myself on her. I tried to get a kiss twice. In retrospect, that was out of line, you know, trying to get the kiss. But to say I tried to force myself on her, well, that's a blatant lie. I never spoke to her or any of her friends ever again. Another story. I had a friend back throughout high school who had a large family. Sometimes we would go to a playground next to his house with some of his siblings just to hang out. A few times I would push one of his older sisters on a swing. One day, my sister, who was also friends with the family, told me that the sister I would push on the swing had said that while I was doing it, I would press my penis against her. I freaked out. She's saying I did what? After that, I never so much as shook her hand again, and I limited as much contact with her as possible. Now, third story, that same friend that I hung out with in high school, well, he was considered attractive. A lot of the girls liked him. It seemed every time that I was interested in a girl, they'd meet him and forget all about me. It made me pretty jealous that I was always so invisible. But when he knew that I liked a girl, and then he ended up dating her, I got pretty upset. Of course, this is high school, they didn't last. The next girl he dated, just after high school, got pretty serious with. That's when I did something extraordinarily stupid. I flirted with her way too much. And once, I tried to grab her and kiss her. It was absolutely horrible of me to do this, and I have absolutely no excuse for doing it. No excuse whatsoever. Of course, he found out. He was upset, but he didn't want to throw away our long friendship. So he talked to me about it. Turned out to be the beginning of the end anyway. I don't remember much of the conversation, but I remember him saying this. I know you're not that attractive, and you feel the need to force yourself on girls. After those words came out of his mouth, everything else became white noise. That was a total change for me. I never again made any aggressive move toward a woman. I would flirt heavily, verbally, but never make any physical advancement. And even with the flirtation, I would sometimes say, hey, you know, I lay this on kind of thick. If I ever make you feel uncomfortable, just say the word and I'll stop. And every time I said that, the woman would say, yes, she understood, but that I was still within the acceptable boundaries. If I tell a woman that I'm interested in her, and she rejects me, that's it. No second chance, no maybe no means yes, none of that. It's over. I'm done. I've lost out on relationships because the woman assumed I wasn't interested, because I insist on having that clear, obvious, blatant signal that yes, it's acceptable to approach me. I'm always in perpetual caution mode. That's what those experiences made me. Yes, I royally screwed up. I did some things that I should not have done, and I am ashamed of it. But I'm also still angry at the false accusations. I bring these things up because I am not in a position of power, so I have nothing to hide. Even if it is really embarrassing to admit it. I hate the person that I was. I hate that I did those things. But in the current climate, that getting out, I could very well lose my livelihood for what I did. But there's another side to this. Two more stories. First, about, I'd say 15 years ago or so, there was a coworker who liked me. He would flirt with me all the time. At first it was gentle and I would just brush it off because, to be perfectly honest, it was just nice to have a little bit of attention. But it kept happening. Many times. After a while, he started getting pretty aggressive. The verbal flirtation turned into physical. And after a particularly long and uncomfortable caress of my chest from him one day, I finally told him to just knock it off. He didn't like it, but he did it. Second story. And this is something I really don't like to talk about. But around that same time, roughly 15 or so years ago, I was on a company-sponsored weekend getaway with some co-workers in Austin. Some of us got pretty drunk, and I ended up in bed with a guy from work that I hardly knew. He came into my room after our night of partying, and we started making out. We were feeling each other get aroused, and I was enjoying it. Unfortunately, this was about to become the worst sexual experience of my life. He was very aggressive and a bit sadistic. There's a particular style of humiliation porn where a person performing fellatio on a man has their head forced down to make them take the penis in as far as possible, causing them to choke and gag. It turned out this guy was into that. So, not long after I started going down on him, he put his hand on the back of my head and forced me to take in more than I was ready. Now, keep in mind, I'm still pretty drunk at this point, so this really is not what I wanted. I asked him to stop. I went back to giving head, and after a few seconds, he pushed me down again. I pushed his hand away and tried to continue, but then he got really aggressive. He grabbed my head with both hands and forced me down while repeatedly thrusting his hip, forcing his penis in as far as it could go. I was choking, gagging, tears were flowing down my face. I was having trouble breathing. I was already lightheaded from the drinking. And, in retrospect, I really wish I had just thrown up all over him. I should have at least thrown him out of my room. But he was much bigger than me. And I was kind of scared to confront him. I told him I couldn't continue and wanted to sleep. He didn't take the hint to leave and fell asleep in my bed instead. I fell asleep for a while. Sometime later, I woke up to him grabbing my hips, the tip of his erection pressed up against my anus, and he's trying to enter me without my consent. I panicked. I pushed him away. I told him no. And he wasn't happy about it. I'm scared of him at this point. I'm not sure what to do. I'm not sure what kind of situation I'm really in. I certainly can't tell what kind of frame of mind he's in. I get out of bed, and his drunk ass is back to snoring in a few minutes. But now I'm too afraid to fall asleep. I stare out the window and try to figure out what to do. Finally, I decide I'm just going to go into the bathroom and make a lot of noise, hopefully wake him up, and tell him that I'm going to get up early and that he needs to go. Again, I'm not entirely sure what kind of frame of mind he's in, but it worked. He got up, put his clothes on, and stumbled out of my room. So why am I telling you all these things? These are 5 stories I've never told anyone. Not even Gina, my wife. I've seen this from both sides. I have guilt and innocence. Now, the latter does not excuse the former. I'm not trying to make that point at all. Where I have done wrong, I fully admit to doing wrong. And this is not an excuse for the sexual predators out there. If somebody tries to force themselves onto another, that's a crime, and they deserve to be punished. However, just as there are degrees of theft, assault, and even murder, shouldn't there also be a lesser punishment for the person who tries to, I don't know, kiss another? And a much stronger punishment for the person who tries to rape another? Again, you want to say that they should all have their livelihood taken from them? You're welcome to your opinion. But I disagree. Having been on both sides of this, it's not black and white. I have questions. And maybe Maybe that's why I'm still not entirely sure of what my opinion is in all of this, because I still have a lot of questions that I want to have answered. I mean, we all know about what's gone on the past several months, and how the court of public opinion is reacting. But what if it's a woman making the routine unwelcome advances? Are you going to go after her with equal force as you would a man? I'm sure there are still some out there who believe a woman cannot rape a man. Obviously, that's not true. A man can have an erection or be coerced into one, even though he does not want to have sex. Also, what happens when an accuser lies? Please note, I did not say if an accuser lies, but when. It will happen. Statistically, it probably already has. What happens if someone loses their livelihood over a false allegation? What compensation do you then give to the true victim? How can they be compensated if they've lost their livelihood? What about a first-time offender? No, not in the case of rape or attempted rape or anything like that, but what about a person trying to kiss another? What about a person overtly flirting with another? Is it one strike and you're out? If you push the envelope and they say no, can you back off and be okay, or do you still get castigated? Does it matter if it's in the workplace? If you find somebody attractive at work, are they automatically off limits because it's a professional setting? Is workplace flirtation no longer allowed? I mean, just from my perspective, there are a few coworkers who could come on to me and I'd be fine with it. And others doing the exact same thing would be rejected. Which leads to my perspective that it all kind of depends on whether the receiver of the flirtation wants the attention from the other person. I mean, not many people consider Lyle Lovett an attractive man, but Julia Roberts seemed to be okay with him for a while. Jason Momoa could hit on my wife and she would be totally into it. But Tom Brady flirting with her would be a turnoff. We're already at a point where elementary school children are being disciplined for improper behavior because they hug someone or kiss someone on the cheek. Are we really that sickeningly rigid, unforgiving, and unwilling to politely decline and correct misguided behavior? Yes! The answer to that question is yes. I mean, hell, look at us. Not just in the aspect of interpersonal relations, but in general, it's bad out there. We are a hateful country. We're getting worse by the day. We look for reasons to hate. If the hatred isn't there, we'll make it up so we can legitimize our hateful response. We create excuses to direct hate at people and groups we don't like. We fight hatred with hatred. We've got bad leadership in our government right now. We've had a long succession of really bad leadership for almost the last century. And as much as Donald Trump upsets me, I am doubly infuriated at those who constantly try to brand him as a Nazi, and then by extension, branding anyone who votes for or even remotely supports him as a Nazi. This irritates me not just because they are ignorant as to the definition of what a Nazi is, but because of the fallout of their hateful hyperbole. This vocal faction on the left keeps pounding the Nazi narrative and blatantly alienating everyone on the right. The hatred is palpable, and the right is well aware of how the left perceives them. So, is it any wonder that for the longest time, it appeared that the right-wing voters of Alabama were going to elect an alleged pedophile to the Senate? Think about that. They were saying that an alleged pedophile is a better candidate than a Democrat. That's how bad it is. And all the hatred that the left wreaks at the right, it's returned right back. Both sides of the political aisle try to claim a monopoly on morality while painting the other side as evil incarnate. And you wonder why we are so fractured. If you subscribe to the leftist ideology, you're only a good person if you surrender to the collective and obey climate change propaganda. If you force people to surrender an arbitrary portion of their personal income to what socialist morality teaches to be good causes. If you surrender your sovereignty to a centralized liberal government that will tell you how to live communal lives, run your business, and interact with others. If you subscribe to the right-wing ideology, you're only a good person if you surrender to the collective and obey patriotic propaganda. If you force people to surrender an arbitrary portion of their personal income to what conservative morality teaches to be good causes. If you surrender your sovereignty to a centralized Republican government that will teach you how to live righteous lives, run your business, and interact with others. It's bad enough each side believes they have the morality market cornered. But then they force it down everybody else's throats, creating more animosity and more hatred. All because nobody has the courage to take a step back and react to the reality of a situation. Instead, they look to hammer anybody who shows the slightest bit of interest, support, or sympathy to the opposition. That all-or-nothing draconian view of morality and punishment has spread its way into every facet of our lives. We have the horrible crime of physically violating another person. And this sadly went on far too long. Victims need to know they can come forward and be heard and be respected. But what is the answer after the truth is known? Is it to isolate the perpetrators and punish only them for their crimes? Or is it to destroy the lives of anyone who so much as offers a compliment, especially if it's somebody you don't find attractive? If someone doesn't want to go along 100% with your figurative carpet bombing of outrage and retribution, are you going to allow them to air their concerns, or are you going to lash out just because they voiced their opinions? Like me. At what point does kill become overkill? At what point does the revelation of truth about sexual predators become a witch hunt of anyone who dares to find you attractive? At what point do we change from getting justice for the victims to getting revenge on someone who offers a single unwanted flirt? Once the line is crossed, can we ever go back? Once the court of public opinion is done, will flirtation ever be innocent again? This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.